Okay, so now we turn to, should be up to I, right? Yeah, here we are, I. So here we have, there are two psukim. In Parshas Yisro, we have the appointment at Yisro's suggestion of a whole judicial system. So this is Dini Mamonos. The Chora is Dini Mamonos with the Sanhedrin, right? It's the whole gamut. And then in Parshas Behaloscha, Moshe gives Yehoshua smicha. Now, did Yehoshua not have smicha in Parshas Sanhedrin? Why does Yehoshua need smicha now? I want to point out also that there's really a third parsha, which is Esfalishiv Mishvizikne Yisrael, right? That we all, right? So on a parshanut level, we have to talk about how all these things relate to each other, but we're interested now in a Brisker Halacha framework. The Brisker Halacha framework, we have three parshios. What's the connection among these three? The Rav only talks about the first two. Rav adds on a couple of other issues. Is that if you look in the Shalshelas HaKabbalah in the Hakdama to the Yad, he says, Elazar Pinchas V'Hoshua Shlashtan Kibla V'Moshe. So right, so Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua are all students of Moshe, but Yeshua, Shu Talmidah Shem Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu Masar Torah Shabbal Peh Vitzivahu Alav. Okay, so there's a difference somehow between the Kabbalah that Elazar and Pinchas get and the Kabbalah that Yeshua gets. To the point that if you look later on in the Yad, he tells you that Pinchas received the Kabbalah from Yeshua. Why does Pinchas need a Kabbalah from Yehoshua if Pinchas had a Kabbalah directly from Moshe? So the Rav tells you in the article Obedient to Kanas Moshe, right, it's the same article we did before, just later in it, he has a Palin Chakira. There is Horas Isser Veheter Ushar Dine Torah, and there is Masoret V'Kabbalah. The Horas Isser Veheter is the smicha that was given in Parshat Yisro. But there's a new din called Masoret V'Kabbalah that is the smicha that was given to Yehoshua exclusively. He calls it Horas Yisro V'Heter Ushar Dinei Torah. Okay, the problem is Horas Yisro V'Heter is not accurate as a description, because what do the people in Yisro judge? Mamonos. Okay, so here I think is the key. So we've already seen that the Rav thinks of Mamonos as a category of Hora, because he said, what's the language of Smicha? Yore V'Yadin. So there is a framework in which the term Hora includes both of Rav Chaim's aspects, namely the horah, the termination of the law, and the hatalas hadin al hanidonim. And there's a different framework in which he divides those two. This is one of the places where he conflates them. So I want to suggest that the overall framework is like this. So the Rav says that the Sanhedrin functions in two kinds of cases. There are cases where it does nothing but determine the law. Or should I say, the Sanhedrin has two functions. The Sanhedrin has the function of determining the law, and the Sanhedrin has the function of imposing the law. The smicha, in terms of Yehoshua, in terms of Yisro, was in terms of imposing the law. The smicha of Yehoshua, which was the Masorah Torah Shebal Peh, was the capacity to determine the law. How do I know this? Because the Rav explains that the reason that Yehoshua gets smicha in Halotcha is that back in Yisro, Moshe Rabbeinu is the only source of the law, and nobody can be cholik on him. And that's why back in Yisro, Moshe is b'makom ayin aleph. He plays the role of Sanhedrin, because the role of Sanhedrin is to be the source of Torah Shebal Peh, meaning That's what determines the law. But while Moshe Rabbeinu is the Sanhedrin, there is no deliberative function to the Sanhedrin, which means there is no first vote. Because the purpose of the first vote, right, is the outcome of a deliberative process that determines the law. But in Balotcha, Moshe gives the Torah Shel Peh over to Yehoshua, and that means that the process of that, right, that gives the Sanhedrin the capacity for doing Hora. Or put differently, in part, the, what was done by the people in Yisro was what Rav Chaim calls the role of the Beis Din Shel Hedyotot. Okay? But the difference between them and Hedyotot is they had smicha, so they could judge coercively. Right? But they did not, right? They didn't have the capacity to make Hora. They did have the possibility for kfiya. How do I know they didn't have the possibility to make Hora? Because what are they supposed to do if they find it too hard? Pass it up to Moshe, right? So it's very clear in Yisro that the whole role of the court is simply to impose the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu taught them. Okay, so we have now, I think, is a single grand scheme. Okay, Hora, right? Actually, the Sanhedrin, now we go, right? The Sanhedrin actually has three functions, one of which divides into two. One function of the Sanhedrin is to be the semel, right, to act on behalf of Klal Yisrael. A second role of the Sanhedrin is to create Maasei Beitin. A third is in the realm of Hora. We have some ambiguity as to whether the imposition of the Din on Nidonim in specific cases is a subcategory of Hora of the Sanhedrin or is a subcategory putting the Maaseh Din HaNidonim. I prefer to say it that way. The smicha that Yehoshua got is what enables you to determine the laws of the Torah. The smicha that was given in Yisro is what enables you to enforce the laws of the Torah. If you want to be really fancy, the Rav doesn't say this, you could say that, and the Parsha of Esfali, that's the Parsha that talks about representing Klal Yisrael. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't handle Klal Yisrael all by myself. So God says, okay, you don't have to handle Klal Yisrael all by yourself. When it comes to the function of being Klal Yisrael, you can have people to help you. So really the three parshios and three roles. Yisro is the role of implementing the law. The smicha to Yeshua is the role of determining the law. And if you want, Esfali Shivimish is the role of, right, of representing Klal Yisrael. Okay, now we know that each of these roles is divisible in terms, right, in that the Sanhedrin can act as one but not the other. We know that within the realm of Dine Mamonos, there is a distinction, right, there are in a regular Beis Din, there are two stages. We know that in a regular Mamonos Beis Din, you can play one, it's possible to be authorized to play one role but not the other. Okay, what we don't know yet is how that plays out in terms of smicha. And by the way, the question was asked before, why does these two shlevim exist only in terms of mamonos and not nefashos and kiddush hakodesh? Right, because the nefashos and kiddush hakodesh are fundamentally just implementation things. Right, the purpose of the court is not to determine the law. The purpose of the court is to decide whether the person is guilty or innocent, or whether, right, the stage of determining the law loses its independent significance. But the Rav says over and over again that is the secondary function of the Beis Din, which is why the Rambam opens Hilchos Mamrim by describing it solely as the Amud HaHora and the source of Torah Shel Peh. Okay. So that brings us to J. Okay, so we have so far in the Rav, right, again, we have defined the aspects of a Beis Din. We have shown that on a court short of the Sanhedrin, people can be authorized to play one function of the Beis Din and not the other. The question is it possible to be a member of the Sanhedrin for some purposes but not for others? To which the Rav says, now we're in source J. Ach piat em lano, nira.
So
Raman, we quote the beginning of Hilchos Raman again. So what the Rav says is, now that we have subdivided the roles of the Sanhedrin, and I believe, now that we have classified the roles of the Sanhedrin and left, right, in such a way that we can classify the roles of the Sanhedrin in the same way that Rav Chaim classified the roles of a regular Bezdin for Mamonos. So now the Rav says, so it's possible to be a member of the Sanhedrin for only those roles that are, for only those roles that are the Sanhedrin in terms of Horah, and not in terms of its other roles. And then he says, ah, what about verdicts? So now he tells you that, you know what? When I meet, right, there are times when the purpose of the Sanhedrin is just to have what Rav Chaim called the first vote in Nomino's cases. And you can be a member of the Sanhedrin for that first vote. Probably not in Nefesh's cases. But in other, right, but the major role of Sanhedrin has nothing to do with Hatalas and General Adonah. The major role of Sanhedrin is just to determine what the law is so that other courts can implement it. In terms of that function, of determining what the law is, the Rav says there's no reason that a ger can't have that. And that is the smicha that Moshe gave Yehoshua. So a ger can have smicha, but only this kind of smicha. Okay, so now you're going to tell me, by Rabbi Clapper, that can't possibly be so, because it says that a ger can't be a dayan. Sure, a ger can't be a dayan, right, for those, for the function of Hatalas HaDin Al HaNidonim. But of course a ger can be a dayan for the purpose of Ras B'chukei HaTorah. And then you'll tell me, but Rabbi Clapper, the Rambam says that you can't get smicha for one thing until you're roy for all the others. That's true. There are two kinds of smicha. For each kind of smicha, you cannot get smicha for one category of law unless you can get smicha for all the categories of law. So you can't get smicha to be matil hachok al hanidonim for mamonos unless you could also get smicha for being matil hachok al hanidonim for nefashos. And you can't get smicha to determine the horas HaTorah for Mamonos unless you can also get smicha to determine the horas HaTorah for Nefashos and Kiddush HaChodesh. But the Rambam did not mean that you can't get horah for Hatalas HaChok Al Nidonim, just, right, you can't get smicha for determining the law just because you can't get smicha for imposing the law. Those are wholly separable. Okay. And now you'll tell me, but Rabbi Clapper, doesn't the Rambam say that you can't give a ger a srara or a mesima? To which I have to tell you, so the Rav held that giving somebody smicha, and even appointing them nasi and av bezin of the Sanhedrin, for the purposes of Horah B'chukei HaTorah, is neither a srara nor a mesima. Now you're going to have to tell me, Barak Clapper, what? You just said that, right? You can't just do that, right? This is where you should be asking me the question, right? I forgot your name again, I'm sorry.
Moshe,
yes, right? You should be asking that question. You can't just, right, that, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all. So I'm in a very good mood today about Brisker Chakira's being meaningful, I should say. Because,
I have another question.
Hold it for a moment, okay? Right? This is just like the fun distraction where we weren't, right? Where yesterday on Facebook, somebody asked, why is it that usually we hold that tax deductions are not additive? You can't, right? You can't take the same thing twice. But we do say that you're allowed to take the mortgage interest deduction, and then you can also exempt the same money you paid for your mortgage interest, you can now take off for parsonage if you're a clergy person. Now, why is that? Isn't that double dipping? Generally, right? Generally, you can't take the same thing twice. So I said, no, you don't understand. The mortgage interest deduction is a din in the chefsa. Because, what's the point? The point is that we want to make buying houses cheaper than renting them. Right? So then, right, it's what's your relationship going to be to the chefsa? But the parsonage deduction is in the gavra. We want clergy people to be able to get housing cheaper than other people. Therefore, it has to be added to whatever other deductions are in there, otherwise we would cancel each other out, right? So there, that was a beautiful case where the Gavra Chevsa distinction is really, really meaningful. So we're in a good mood, right? Today is Briska Chakira, right? A really meaningful day. So I really want to take that on, right? How can I make this claim? Right, on what basis can I make the claim? If you're convinced, on what basis can the Rav make the claim? Which he obviously does, right? I didn't make any, right? All I did was give you the background to get to the point the Rav says explicitly, which is that Shmai and Naftali were the Nasi and the Avbezer of Sanhedrin, and they had smicha. Right? I could have started the shir at that point. And just that the Rav says that Shmai and Naftali were Gerim, it's usher for Gerim to be Dayanim, but Shmai and Naftali were, and to get Sarara, and to get Mesimos. Right, and Abezin has a gear in his puzzle, but Shmai and Naftali were the Nasi and Abezin of Sanhedrin. So that's a fun, right? All I did was give you the conceptual background, right? What I'm arguing is the intellectual history. That what the Rav did was he took, Rav Chaim had this one idea. He applied this idea in two separate contexts. First, in separating what two different kinds of court can do, and then talking about two different stages in the process of a court. The Rav took that idea and he expanded it out. He said it's not only true of a Mamonos Bezin, it's also true of the Sanhedrin. It's not only true in individual cases, you can also talk about separate role. The Sanhedrin plays different roles in different cases. And it's not only true of the Sanhedrin, it's also true, right, that you can have smicha for one of those two. But all of those, right, everything the Rav said is an extension of the Rav Chaim. But it brings us to this point, which is not anywhere in Rav Chaim, which is the claim that this kind of smicha is neither Srara nor Mesima. Yes?
So, this is kind of what I was trying to get at with my question for you. So what does this Bezdin do? So can you argue that it's not a Srara or a Mesima if the Smicha basically entitles you to write Shtiklos Torah?
Yes,
you can. Not a Srara or a Mesima because you cannot create any sort of enforceable Chalas.
Excellent. They're just saying the same thing, of course. Yes. But except what I would object to, and this relates to, Joshua sent me a tumim, which he claimed was the same idea, which basically said, right, you're just engaging in shtik lech Torah. So I want to undo that mere shtik lech Torah thing. Okay? Right, because you're claiming there's a smicha, which puts you on the Sanhedrin, right? Right, as Nasi and Av Bezdin, but really all it means is you get to publish articles in Beis Yitzchak. Right? That's a little odd. And not only that, what is the Rav says, right, let me be clear, the Rav says this is the Iker Tafkid of the Sanhedrin.
And meanwhile, right. The guy who is distributing water in the field.
But Srara is over something.
So hold on. Yeah. Maybe. I want to be more precise than that. Okay. So I want to show you, first of all, to build this thesis out, I want to show you that the Rav didn't only say this about Garrett. Okay, so if you take a look at K, that's where we are now. So the Rav says, "Al pi mahalach ze yale biyadenu tmiha acheret sheberamam." The perek bed mihilchas Sanhedrin pasak v'zel l'shono malchei beis David afal pi shein loshivin osam b'Sanhedrin yoshim v'danim hei mesam. And that's on the base of the Gemara, right? The Gemara says, "Ein loshivin melech b'Sanhedrin." So according to the Intar, you can't put the king of the Sanhedrin. And yet, we have the same problem. It says, Kivel mi Davidu beis dino. So, right, and we have all this notion of David being on the Sanhedrin. So how can David be an Asina Sanhedrin, if in that way? So the answer is that David had the same kind of smicha as Shmaya and Naftali. Okay, one more, you'll all figure out by now. One other case. Tosfos deals with Dvar HaNeviah. Right, Dvar Neviah. So one din in Tosfos is that Dvar Neviah was a dayan. That shita is uninteresting to us because that shita whatever holds that women are kashrut dayanos. Right. But there's a second teretz of Tosfos which says that she was not a right, and then all the rishonim as far after pick it up or pretty many demonstrates she wasn't actually a dayan. She was milamedet lehem hadinim. The way Tosfos says. But the pasuk says, not only v'yishavtat at am beit ha'i, but also v'yalu eleha kol bnei Yisrael l'mishpat. Right? You want to explain what shofetet means? Maybe she was just military leader. But v'yalu eleha kol am l'mishpat. You can't say the word right. So what's going on? So the rabbi said, if you think that all you can do is give shtiklach Torah, then this answer of Tosfos is a boichsvara, right? Yeah, what it means, but that's what it means. But if you think that every case of dini mamonos has two components, and the Bezdin has to vote twice. Once it has to vote about what the law is, and the other time it has to impose the law on the nidonim, and there even is a category called a yachid mumche, who is done. When they're done, they don't impose the chok al nidonim; they determine the law. So now we understand what Tosfos means by milamedet lahem danim, by milamedet lahem dinim. Devarah also had this kind of smicha. Okay, so now we have three cases in which the Rav extends this case to claim that women and kings and gerim, right? That's a new triangle, right? Nashim malachim v'gerim. We can replace that as if nashim avadim ktanim is a new. that's a new category, right? They are all capable of giving this kind of hora, which is an official position on the Bezdin and on the Sanhedrin. He goes so far as to say, if you look in the Shurim on the next page, he says chalos, right? Aleph, we're in K, and we're still in K, right? The second thing, which says Shurim on, he says this is called a Chalot Shem Minoy Begavra Lios Mimuna Levezin Ulhi Kare Daya. Right? It's got everything. Right. It's a Chalot Shem Minoy Begavra.
Maybe it's the wrong kind of question. What does that mean?
It means it's not a mere shtickle Torah.
Can we examine what this means? By pointing out that Shlomo Ubisino, according to the Gemara, were Masakin, all of Tosfos Erevin.
We could do that, but that would be challenging whether what the Rav says is true, which we're not going to do.
But this would argue that they can determine law.
Uh-huh.
They can't enforce it, but a later Bezdin can enforce this law that they determined.
You can have, or you can claim that the one thing the Rav has never spoken about here is legislation.
But I'm asking that it seems like they have legislative but not executive authority.
No, it's not legislative authority. Legislation is making law. This is not making law. This is determining law. Okay? Now, I should say that I'm not aware of anywhere that the Rav explicitly talks about whether Gerim can have the role of being on Sanhedrin to represent Klal Yisrael. I think the answer is no. Right, I think the Melech would violate separation of powers. To represent Klal Yisrael in both capacities. So that would be unconstitutional anyway. But
what does this mean?
I think that the Rav means that Gerim, women, and kings can only be on Sanhedrin for this one narrow role, which is the Ikar role. Which is the Hora. So now,
and what do we do?
I don't know, right? That's a kasha. Rav doesn't deal with it. I can't tell you.
Can I call this smicha?
Yes, it is the smicha.
This is what smicha really is. So if you have the smicha, you can give smicha to other people.
Yes, you can do that too.
That's like the clear, it's actually worth something, it's meaningful.
If you have the smicha, you can give smicha. You can only give the same smicha that you got. I should say the Rav says. The Rav doesn't tell me, so I don't know for sure, right, what the limitation is. What the Rav does say is that if you look at the Gemara and the Rambam's description of smicha, it says that there are three things. One is we call you Rebbe. Two is we say that, right. We say that so-and-so is a samuch, and three is that we give you the capacity to be done dine nefashos. Be done dine knasos. The Rav, for whatever reason, does not divide this into three roles, right? Calling you Rebbe, saying you're a samuch, and being done dine knasos, he divides it in two. He says there's category A, which is being called Rebbe and being known as a Samach, and category B, which is being Matil Dine Knossos. Again, Yeshua is the only one who gets category A, which means Rebbe and Samach. Until him, people only have Dine Knossos. So it divides in, right? This is, right? So we ask, what gives you the dread title Rabbi? Right? And what enables you to say, I am a Samach? It's this capacity, which all of you keep seeing saying is, but this is a mere capacity. You're just saying Shtik Lech Torah. So I used to think this also. But I want, before I try and move one step further, and here, where we are right now, I should say, is we are now at the end of the Rav's halachic treatments of this issue, so far as I know. But what I hope I have convinced you all is that all these words of the Rav, they start from Rav Chaim, and they all are part of a single conceptual vision of what smicha, bezin, and sanhedrin are. And the Rav's position about Geirus is not an ad hoc solution for Geirus, but instead it is a minor consequence of a fundamental shita that he has about Torah generally. Yes, sorry, what's your name?
Yosef Rav.
Yes.
Just to make sure I understand, the smicha that you can get does allow a ger to coerce people.
No.
It's just judicial coercion.
No.
Aren't the lower courts bound by the upper court?
The lower courts are bound...
structure that way, right?
Good question. Hold that question for a moment, okay? Because you understand the two of you are in tension with each other, right? He's saying it's just a mere shtickle Torah, and now you're saying the mere shtickle Torah binds the courts.
Right.
So let's play with it. Let's play.
I realize the mere shtickle Torah is also seems to be legislative.
And you're having trouble, right? You're having trouble using that word legislative. I don't want to use the word legislative. You'll see why. Yes, Josh.
Look at Rabbi Reichman's footnote 6.
Yeah.
It's on. You'll flip back to page 6.
Yeah, he has it exactly right. He's exactly right. There's one thing Reichman doesn't have. I'll just say it seems to me maybe I misread the footnote. I want to make one point because that will matter for the distraction. That I think some people think that the Rav says this, the vort about gerim is just a totza'ah of his general shita. The vort about women is too. But what should be understood, the Rav doesn't say this, he says this according to the shita melamedes lahem dinim, but there's another shita that women don't have this capacity. No, there are only two shitas. There's the shita that women can be mamish dayanim, dayanotes, and there's this. Right? Even the shitot that say that Devora was dana al piya dibur, what I think they mean according, I can't prove it, I think they mean according to the Rav is, they don't think that this kind of smicha is sufficient to explain the pasuk. So they think that in order to explain the pasuk, you have to explain how Devora could be matil achok al nidonim. But there's no shita which says that women can't have this kind of smicha. What there's one shita that says explicitly that women can have this kind of smicha, and right, one shita which says explicitly that women can have even the matil chok al nidonim smicha, and a bunch of terutzim like kiblu lahu and al piya dibur that don't address the question. Okay, now why does this matter to me? Because what I want to claim is, now ask the question in reverse. This is not a Brisker question. I confess, we also step out of the persona for a moment. Is there anybody, Jewish, whom the Rav believes can't get this kind of smicha?
Yes, people with the inability to reach a Rav.
Wait, no, so like, what about the
by their, right,
the
people summa, by their...
The Summa Be'echad Me'ena. This is my longest
yes,
question.
Of course,
within,
yeah.
Within the Rav's Shita, can the Summa Be'echad Me'ena get smicha for the Sanhedrin?
Of course.
Yeah.
But only for this kind.
Contradicting exactly what he wrote in Mishnah Torah.
No more than he does about Ger. Right, he has, right. This is a board that right. This everything that you read, you have to understand. Right, you have to put this klakira in everywhere. And my contention is that the Rav thinks that every single Jew can have this kind of smicha,
except for people who have inability to issue hora.
Except for people who don't. Right, people who don't have the intellectual capacity to issue hora. Pardon? All right, we talk about what intellectual things, right? But there's no class of people, there are no external, right? There are no external conditions, right? That, right? to Jewishness. That prevent you from having this, yes.
Just stick up for Skutsky's chiluk. Might you claim that some of the limitations on the Andayanim exist within the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat context? Like, we don't want you to pass on Torah Shabbat if you're not of a certain stature. So you, Gerim and Nashim can have that stature. Maybe Summa Be'achad Einav can.
You want to invent that? Sure, I don't see any evidence. And I think the Rav, Summa Be'achad Einav, I think the Rav explicitly contradicts. Because I think that just ties up with the Rav Chaim, I think. I don't see any. So I want to make the claim that this is not an accident, and that we really want to understand what's going on to the Rav. Right? First of all, we have to understand conceptually, but then we have to understand this conceptual position has an outcome, or an assumption, whichever way you want to frame it, which is that there is a form of smicha and membership in the Sanhedrin which is open to every Jew by virtue of being Jewish. Now, why would the Rav... Yes?
People from
interesting, but I don't know. But the Rav doesn't talk about that role of Sanhedrin.
But there needs to be a way on, but that everyone has access to that position.
That's a nice verse, very, very democratic. I don't think the Rav has this interest at all. But here's what I think the Rav does have. Right, that's a nice svara. If you want to write, if you're right, when we write your sefer, right, we'll say, look, right, I forgot your name again. What was your
name?
Reuven Herzog. Right. So we'll say, right. So Reuven Herzog, like, you know, started with this deep democratic notion that no representation without eligibility or something like that, right? And that would be your Yusuf, right? Hopefully, you have a grandfather who said something similar that you can that you can pin it all. Okay, so now we're gonna leave the realm of halacha for a moment. We're gonna turn to isha halacha, which we'll read in the basically, the Professor Kaplan's translation. I'm going to leave aside where the places where they shouldn't go. When many halachic concepts do not correspond with the phenomena of the real world, halachic man is not at all distressed. His deepest desire is not the realization of the halacha, but rather the ideal construction that was given to him from Sinai, and this ideal construction exists forever. There never was an Irni Dachas, there never, right, Drosh V'Kabbal Schar, there never was a Bayis HaManuga, there never was a Ben Soramora. Right. Halachic man is not at all grieved by the fact that many ideal constructions have never been and will never be actualized. Why does it matter whether they will or won't exist? The foundation of foundations and the pillar of halachic thought is not the practical ruling, but the determination of the theoretical halacha. Therefore, many of the greatest halachic men avoided and still avoided serving rabbinic posts. They joined themselves to the groups of those who are reluctant to render practical decisions, and if necessity, which is not to be decried, compels them to disregard their preference and to render practical decisions, ein zu ela tu'udaz ira u'mitzira, mitzira she'ein anshei ha'halacha mitmakrim eleha. This is not what halachic men devote themselves to. Okay. It should, I think, be clear that the division the Rav makes between what the Ish Halacha is interested in and what the Ish Halacha is not interested in is the Ish Halacha is interested in, and here's what I wanted to point right, because I misread this for years. Why is Ish Halacha interested in vorts in Beis Yitzchak and not in real people's lives? The Ish Halacha is interested in the first vote of the Sanhedrin, but not the second. The Ish Halacha is interested in determining what the Torah Sheba'al Peh is, which is the function of the Sanhedrin. He's not interested in psak, which is just a consequence of what the Ish Halacha decides anyway. What he cares about is Torah. Now the Rav tells you further. So I should say generally, I have not been able to read any of the posthumously published Rav works, but I found online there's a new one, Halachic Morality, which I will have to go have. Actually, I will ask you to sprung off to buy for me at the farm sale. New this year, Magid came out with a new collection, which really matters, it seems. As an essay, right, this book called Halachic Morality, in which it says, right, he really, the Rav tells you for the first time, I think, that I what he means by this eternal halacha and how that relates to how you behave. He says, what is more, investigation, the formulation of practical ethical standards is vitally necessary in every epoch. The halachic system is basically constant and unalterable. Very seldom does it take cognizance of the flux of events and the kaleidoscope metamorphoses of the environments in which the halachic norm is realized. The halacha is a postulated, impersonal, formal, self-sufficient, and bounded in performance. one which interferes with historical realities and tries to impose its normative and doctrinal authority upon them, rather than an act which grows out of the multifaceted everyday human experience. It is a promulgation of a norm that solves all difficulties once and for all and lays down beforehand what everyone has to do or refrain from doing in every situation. The changes in the realm of fact do not have a bearing upon the a priori halachic norm, but rather on its application and its technical aspects. The last line is what I really care about. Right? That the changes in the realm of fact, the metzias of the case, does not affect what the halacha is, although it can very much affect what the psak is. Right? There's the halacha, and then there's its application and its technical aspects, which is the halacha lema'aseh. For the Rav, fundamentally what the Ish Halacha engages in is the determination of the halacha, and not the hatalat hachok al nidonim. Now, why does this matter? So now I'm going to break off and go into philosophy, pure philosophy. Ish Halacha is an amazing philosophic work, and it has, as part of its core, it has an attempt to take into account, to deal with, I'm missing the right word, to engage with the modern value of autonomy. Autonomy. How is it, in the world, right, the Rav is coming to the world where autonomy can't, right, autonomy is the ground of ethics and the ground of dignity. How is it that we live in this system which is entirely heteronomous, right, where we do someone else's will, God's will, not our own? How can we reconcile this? The Rav's answer is that that would only be true if all we could do was receive God's will. But we don't. We have the capacity to determine what God's will is. We are part of the creation of Torah Shebaal Peh. The capacity to determine what the law is, not what the psak is. Right? Because the Rav says, in the realm of action, there we are bound completely. Right? We're not autonomous in the realm of action. We follow the law. But we are autonomous in the realm of determining the law. And all of Ish Halacha is this extended argument, is that the reason and the ultimate dignity that human beings have is because halachic men are creative and they are part of the development of God's will. So for the Rav, the capacity to engage, right, the whole role of the Sanhedrin, right, is to be Klal Yisrael being autonomous, having dignity. To be a halachic man is to be a human being with dignity, a Jewish human being with dignity. If you do, right, without that capacity, then Jews are just slaves of God. There's no dignity at all. Now, if you understand that for the Rav, this role of halachic man is what is fundamental for Jewish human dignity, then you can understand, of course, why it is that everybody has to have it. How could we claim that there are human beings who don't have the dignity, who live their life in a system entirely determined by others? Not a practical system. Right? Not interested in what you do, right? But that you get, right? But that the framework in which you live is determined by you as opposed to others. So, what I want to claim now is, right, that the whole thrust of the Rav's conception of Horah, it grows lumdishly out of Rav Chaim. But then it is combined with his own philosophic commitments, right? And what he does is he develops Rav Chaim's distinction between the two stages of Bezdin, the two votes, into an isolation of what he sees as the core role of Sanhedrin, which is also what he defines as the core role of the Jewish human being, which is the participation in the determination of Torah Shebaal Peh. And then I want to argue that it is absolutely no coincidence that in that regard, the thrust of all his words is to expand the franchise as opposed to limit it. And I want to make the claim, right, that at least that the default setting is that he expands it universally among Jews. Okay, so the only move left to make is, so we started by saying that the simplest for it was to claim that the Rav thought that Gerim could have smicha because there is a complete disjunction between classical smicha and contemporary smicha. I would argue fakert. The reason the Rav thought that Gerim can have smicha is because there is a complete identity, Right? The way to say that Gerim can have smicha is not by claiming there's a difference between classical smicha and this smicha. It's claiming that what our smicha is fundamentally a survival of that form of smicha. Right? What our smicha is the capacity to determine, right, to determine the law and not to impose the law on litigants. The imposition of the law on litigants is purely a function nowadays of kibul alayu. And the so there I don't have the smoking gun yet, but I'll tell you why I don't have it, and I'll tell you where I think I could look for it. There is no record that I know of yet. I haven't found a record yet of all the speeches the Rav gave at the Chag HaSmicha. But I found one, which is mentioned among other places in Rabbi Riskin's memoir, where he talks about, and this is source M. Please, someone please remind me at the end I have to deal with the Sora issue. The Rav gave a Chag HaSmicha talk about Rav Yehuda ben Bava, and he tried to address the question of why Rav Yehuda ben Bava sacrifices life to preserve smicha, but it's not Yehuda ben Yadbor, and according to the Rambam, that's usher to give up your life for something that's right for voluntarily. So as opposed to Rav Yehuda ben Bava being lionized, Rav Yehuda ben Bava should be criticized. Right? He's a suicide. So Rav says, right, can't be. So what he says is Rav Yehuda ben Bava's whole life was the Masoret. For the Masoret not to continue, right, would have been his real death. Rav Yehuda ben Bava was not sacrificing his life. He was not sacrificing his life. He was saving his life by enabling the continuation of smicha. Now he gave this at the Chag HaSmicha, and it's in the context of saying, "And you, right? That's what you guys are doing, right? You guys are now the great." So it seems to me pretty clear that the Rav saw this, and And Rav Yehuda ben Bava, the Rav knows perfectly well that smicha isn't necessary for dinei knasos anymore. We solved that shlichus sahu. Right, what smicha is necessary is for the continuation of the masoret. We don't have ish min pi ish Moshe Rabbeinu, but we still keep the masoret going. So I think it's going to be pretty clear that the Rav, and it would be almost psychologically impossible to imagine the Rav thinking otherwise, that contemporary smicha is in fact a continuation of classical smicha. So that leaves only one word left, which is why isn't this a srora? Why isn't this a masima? So let's assume that the definition of a srora and a masima is the capacity to exercise heteronomy over others. It's power over people. Smicha is the antithesis, right? This kind of smicha is the antithesis of that. Smicha is about autonomy. Srora and masimas are things that Geirin can have because they give you power over people, but this smicha is what makes you, what gives you the Keter Torah, it makes you the Sara Torah, it's authority over Torah. And whatever authority it has, when it binds the court, that's not your authority. That's the Torah's authority. Every human being has to have that kind of participation in the authority of Torah, and it's not a srora, it's not a masima, because it has no direct relationship to other human beings, fakir. It's the embodiment of human freedom, as opposed to the imposition of your will on everyone else. All right, that is the shir. Thank you all very much for listening.